This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber. For Tomas Manglonia, journalism is life. He's always loved journalism and storytelling, and he's always known what the final goal would be. Today, Tomas shares more on the journey that he has taken through his career and the next step that he takes into the future. Tomas Manglonia, welcome to Stories from the Pacific.
Apades and Tirowami, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Now, what would the headline be for your life story if you had to write one?
Honestly, we have a saying in the industry, which is, you know, to come. I feel like it would need to be a placeholder, but I've been really blessed to be able to have gotten an education off my island and to come back and do what I've always wanted to do. But honestly, it would probably say developing story because it's still unfolding.
Love that. Now you have some exciting news to share in regards to a new career move. Can you share that with us?
Yes, I'm actually in just the third week of since I launched my own digital news outlet, an independent news outlet called Marianas Press. After working in television for 3 years, which is the same time I've moved back home from the US, I decided it was the right time to finally do what I kept saying I was going to do. I looked back and I reflected, of course, leaving a consistent paycheck is a risk. But I looked back at what I wrote for my undergraduate application, for my graduate school application, and it was always about starting something independent for my people and something I could do and shape on my own along with others in the community. So it's digital only. We're hoping to expand and bring on a few writers in the coming weeks. But this is also a moment that I feel meets the demand of our community, because if those of you who might not know, we have two local papers here. One of them just decided to close shop at the end of the year. And that brought up so many feelings for the community. It's no secret local news is struggling. And our one paper here that will close is just part of a larger trend across local newsrooms that are also shuttering their doors. And so being digital only, I hope, delivers information to where people are at. And I'm hoping to create a sustainable future for news here. In addition to founding that news company, I also am really active in organizing journalists in the Pacific, both at the national level and local level. And so I'm always interested in not learning just how I can be sustainable, but how the entire industry can be healthy. Because as we all know, without a free press, without the news, our democracy can't really function properly. So that's the real motivation behind all of this.
What kinds of stories are you wanting to share with your independent multimedia company?
And so, one of the first stories we did was actually about our relations with Australia. And so we met with the Consul General out of Honolulu, who announced that they're going to formalize more diplomatic ties with Guam and the Northern Mariana Islands. And so we're looking to tell more stories like that, right? If you look at a lot of national stories, they're local stories somewhere, right? It's not just all about how things impact, people outside of our shores. But here in the Pacific, and especially as a U.S. territory, we're at an interesting intersection of politics, our own indigenous identity, and, all the other global developments that are happening right now in the Indo-Pacific. And so I hope to remain locally rooted, but think globally as well, do good journalism locally. That looks like public affairs, government accountability reporting, but also highlight the human experience, right? And I think especially with all the news. There's no shortage of news that can make you sad. And so we also want to be a source of good and connect people through their human experience. And so we're doing some what I call video portraits, you know, like a photo portrait. You know, capture someone through a photo. And I love to do those types of features where you can delve into some of, you know, just the human experience of people who want to make our islands a better place.
This company is new. How big is it at the moment? Is it just you or do you have other staff at the moment?
It's just me. And so I think I have a really strict boss. but, you know, it is a startup. And so, you know, we're operating like one does. But like I said, in January or February, I'm hoping to bring on two more writers at least. And the whole idea is because we always hear it, people aren't buying the paper, people aren't sitting down in the evening to watch television news. And so it's my goal that we meet people where they're at and deliver the stories that you know, both hold our government to account, but also connect us through the human experience.
What are you most excited about for this new step?
I'm excited about telling stories in new ways, not being confined to any particular time limits or formats. I always think about what is the best way to tell a story. What service can we do for the community through that? Whether that's through video, graphics, text, really multimedia, and delivering it in a way that is digestible and understandable for our community. And so right now, you know, I'm focused on doing and highlighting local stories. And in January, we have a new legislature that will be sworn in after the elections in November. And in 2 years, we have another race for governor, and we just elected a new delegate to U.S. Congress, as the military also has major developments on the island of Tinian, which neighbors the island of Saipan, where I'm speaking from. And so there's many local events that also have global implications that we just want to make sure we're here to be a watchdog and document it, and also, you know, be able to contribute to the conversation in a smart way.
Where did your interest in journalism stem from?
It stemmed from a very young age. I was in elementary school, and every morning I would wake up around 6 a.m. And instead of watching cartoons, I would tune into Christiane Amanpour on CNN. There was just something about it that I was so intrigued by. And looking back, it was because news was my window to the world. And eventually I paid attention to other news sources. And I kept asking around, why isn't my island of Rota, my home island of Rota, not included in any of these reports? There's our people, our community matters. And so I remember going to a really small convenience store. I think I bought like a $10 recorder. And I just started going to parent-teacher conferences, going to local events. And with my $10 recorder, I think it ran out of storage pretty quickly. But I was able to just, you know, post my stuff on a blog online. And that led to one thing and another. And I got my first newspaper job in high school and also ended up being able to report on TV in high school. And I guess I never really stopped writing since. I think it's been already about 10 years or so since I had my first published story that I got paid for. And I haven't gotten tired of it.
Do you remember what your first story was?
I do. Yeah, it was about the Rota crow, the Mariana crow, also known as the Aga. You can only find it on the island of Rota. And I interviewed locals and biologists about this very rare bird. And actually, to this day, I still continue to report on the environment and our native birds as well. And so I've had that particular interest. But all of it has always been about the community. It is, I've always had my North Star being that I want to write about my community for my community. And I think these days that's more important than ever.
Do you remember what stories you were covering in middle school whilst still navigating, you know, developing your own identity as a teenager?
Yeah, I mean, I covered, local politicians, community events, parent-teacher conferences. And now, you know, those are places that people still want news from, right? We want to know what's being decided on for our school and for our youth. I haven't stopped writing since then. Now a lot of my work does revolve around local politics, the military development here, and also, a lot of those other feature stories. I'm also increasingly interested in trying to strengthen regional reporting. That was my main job for the television station I worked for, was to bring a regional lens to the stories that they told. And, there's appetite for that and there's a need for it because oftentimes in the Pacific, we're all kind of also talking about the same thing. It just looks differently on the ground for us. But I think it helps build connections when we can understand what's happening in this part of the Pacific and how is it connected to what's happening here or what are the larger implications for the region that also originate from our islands. So, I don't have any particular beat. Pretty much everything the sun touches. And I think, that's the way it should be, right? We can't be too focused on one particular subject and being a generalist here in the Pacific, a general kind of assignment reporter too is, I think, the way to go.
Mm. Did you ever have any other reporters that you were really inspired by when you were developing your own career?
Yes, one of my mentors, who I think now she would be okay with calling her a friend, Anita Hofschneider. She was really the first Indigenous Chamorro journalist I ever really learned about. You know, she went to Harvard, ended up working for the AP, then Simple Beat, and now she's at Grist. And yes, she's doing regional, national stories about the Pacific, focusing on the environment and climate change. And so I know locally, one of my greatest missions is to also educate the next generation of journalists so that we have more Indigenous journalists telling our stories. And it's all a matter of context, right? If you understand the context of the culture and the island, you get more deeply reported stories, better questions asked at press conferences. You get to dig deeper. Yeah, Anita is definitely one of my heroes in this industry, who I felt also lifted other people, other journalists up as she was climbing the ladder too.
Have you tried to adopt some of Anita's traits in your own life and work practice?
I mean, yeah, being deeply rooted in the community, how can you report on a community that you're not actively a part of? And I think that's something we in the Pacific understand. We're not in some large American city where you can say anything about anyone and walk out on the street and have no consequences necessarily, right? Here, we see them at our local fiestas. We see the people we interview at the grocery store. We see them at the doctor's office. So the accountability is there. And it's not to say that the standards are any lower, but that we have real impact and consequences for things that we might see in the media or report on. So I think in general, coming from a small community like ours definitely makes you a better journalist and reminds you of the potential impact of the stories that you're writing and what it means for the community. And so I know that Anita also really takes that seriously, and it's definitely something I've tried to model in terms of thinking about not just how to hold others accountable, but ourselves accountable in our writing.
Have you ever had a circumstance where you've had a tough interview or you've told a story about someone and then you've bumped into them in the community afterwards?
All the time. And I think they understand that I'll give a fair shot. I don't have an agenda. I'm not out to tear anyone down or out to, promote any singular person or agency either. that the job is the job, and they understand that. And I think that's the whole point of this new venture I've started too, is to do that reporting and build the trust with the community, because without the trust and without your sources, then, you know, you don't have anything really meaningful to write about. I hope to continue to maintain that trust. And even if it is a tough interview or a tough story, people know that I've done my due diligence and that I've been fair about how I framed it and wrote about it.
Sounds like you've got the respect of the community for them to understand that.
I hope so. And you know what I always say, if you have haters from both sides of the aisle, then that means that you're doing something right, because
yeah.
I do get criticism from both sides of the aisle. So I think it's a healthy amount of pushback.
Yeah, definitely. Taking a bit of a shift, in an interview that you did recently, you shared how journalism can be lonely. Why is that?
Well, especially here in the Pacific, that was one of the reasons why I decided to form a chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists, because oftentimes you go out, you collect your story, you come back, you know, you kind of just edit it. Newsrooms here are so small, so oftentimes collaborative reporting isn't as common. You know, you get one person to look at it and then it's out, then you rush to the next thing, you know, at least in the daily news cycle. And so that's why I said it could feel lonely, but I think it's changing now, because, you know, we have created this group called the Society of Professional Journalists. It's a national organization, and we have a local chapter restarted after 30 years, since it last was active. And we meet every month. We invite guest speakers from the community. But we just create a sense of community for journalists here. Because the only time we talk is when we're in the field, and those conversations are quick. And so I think coming together, having our profession as the common bond, and then also forming friendships with each other, has made it a lot less lonely. But, yeah, I think, that was the goal, is, to bring, journalists together to, also have, a place to discuss, debrief, and socialize, but also organize together. You know, recently our group also met with the judiciary, our local judges and justices, to talk about expanding access and bringing cameras and recording equipment into the courtrooms for cases, because that's currently not allowed. And so we're doing a lot of advocacy as well, you know, just to let people know we've got your back if you're in a tight situation as a reporter.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber, and I'm speaking with Tomas Manglonia. Tell me about the decision that you made to move to New York.
Yes, and so right after graduate school, I had the great opportunity to intern at a major network in New York. I jumped at the opportunity. It seemed like the logical step after going to graduate school. I spent about 2 months there, and I immediately felt a strong desire to move back. I thought for sure, you know, moving from California to New York, I thought this was where everything will be. This is where my life will be. I was getting ready to stay there for as many years as I could. But, you know, after a few weeks, I was reminded of why I went into journalism. And it wasn't necessarily to climb any ladder or get any sort of popularity, prestige, or be in a big network for the sake of professional development. But it was for my community. It was always not just for me. And so I made it was a difficult decision then, but I look at it now and it was an easy decision, really, because I knew what I wanted to do this entire time, which was to move home and start my own news company. And so I packed up my bags in New York. Some of my family members were not happy that I did, because, you know, sometimes there's that traditional view of you left the island, you got, you know, a good education, you should continue climbing the ladder out there in the States. But I truly believe it, and encourage, and I know other people who've left have come back home to contribute to our community. And so that's what ultimately I did. And I see me founding this new company as, you know, the next evolution in my journey of coming home. And like I said, I always just went back to what the younger me wrote about in my applications to college, internships, and graduate school. I was consistent, and I didn't even mean to be consistent. I just always wrote that I was going to move home and start my own news company. I mean, I look back and those applications were years apart, but I said the same thing. And so, you know, sometimes when I question, was it the right choice or not? I just look back and, you know, younger me, you know, still believes that. So I have no regrets.
Is there a particular memory that you have that triggered that wake up call to why you started journalism in the first place?
Yeah, it was to this day, my home island of Rota has no newspaper there or TV station or reporter living there. I've made an effort to try and go out to Tinian, which is the other island, and Rota, because the media tends not to look that way. And so, you know, the struggle I described and I felt as an elementary school student still persists today. I mean, the ultimate goal was actually to start the news company on my home island, but because of logistics and everything, I had to stay here on Saipan, where, you know, it's the capital and much of government and, you know, business happens. But ultimately, I do want to expand to a point where we can be consistently on the other islands, because those communities matter. And that's the whole reason why I became a journalist, is to tell the stories that don't often get told.
You mentioned living in a smaller community, working as a journalist, as to living in New York and having big communities where not everyone knows each other. Other than that, what differences do you find reporting in New York compared to back home?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I spent months in New York, but I think I'll just reiterate what I said about the accountability part, about running into people at the local grocery store, at your doctor's office. And, you know, sometimes they're your family members you're even writing about, right? Or you're interviewing, you're related to them in some way. And that's such a unique experience and something I've had to navigate, because when I was just starting out, I was so strict about objectivity. And, you know, you can't be involved in that particular way. Of course, I'm still upholding the standard of, you know, fact-based reporting, but it doesn't mean what I thought it used to mean before, in terms of you can't be a part of the community. I thought that's what objectivity was. Like, you're totally hands off. You're, you know, not going to participate or have a conversation with anyone. But here in the Pacific, you know, you have to live in your community, and it's a strength to know your community, especially in a small one like this one.
How do you find the balance of the hustle of journalism and being in and belonging to a community?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I have to remind myself sometimes, and I tell people who move from the States here that, you know, we can't just stomp into and demand things from people, because we're a very relational culture, and we have to approach the news in that way too. It's not that the standard is lower or that we don't get as many things done. It's just that, you know, because of those close relationships and how interconnected our community is, you move about gathering the news in a different way, right? You can't just come in swinging all the time just because you're a journalist and you want answers. It takes time to develop, and, you know, you have a responsibility as well to maintain relationships like that.
Can you ever have a day on the weekend just out in your community and not be looking for a story, or are you always alert and aware of something that could be a story?
We should do a survey of journalists, because I feel like every time I talk to someone, I'm like, oh, that's a good story. But yeah, it's hard to turn off. It definitely is hard to turn off, because... And, you know, I guess that's personally or professionally, that can be good and bad, but I think mostly it might serve a good purpose, because, you know, sometimes we can get caught up in talking to only those in elected office, or those in power, right? We all want that interview. We all want that information. But, you know, as I've said before, an interview with the head of state, to me, is of equal importance as writing the story about the basketball court down the street that hasn't been, you know, fixed for years, that kids in the neighborhood want to play at, you know? And so, yeah, I guess that's kind of my angle to the question of, do you ever stop looking for stories? Because I feel like when I talk to people, you know, outside of the halls of government, that their stories matter too. And I wonder what role journalism can play to make their lives better. You know, even if it's something just down the street from them.
Can you recall a story that you covered that has had a great impact on you?
Yeah, I've been asked this question in different ways before. And one story that has had a great impact on me is about a fisherman from Guam who uses his boat to transport people between islands. Air travel here can be expensive and difficult, you know, and he would tell me he would transport people, you know, for example, a person in a wheelchair who couldn't travel on one of the smaller planes. At one point, this fisherman also transported a casket on his boat because it could fit on his boat. And so I think about stories like that, you know, first of all, it's the human experience, right? These are people living in these islands, trying to make the best life they can and helping each other out. But it also speaks to larger systems, right? Why is our air travel inadequate? What has government been doing about it? And so it's those stories like that start from a really real human place, right? We're not talking about theories or, you know, frameworks or angles. This is like life, everyday life, but it still speaks to the local, regional, and even national actions that are being taken that impact things like air travel. So that's one story that I think of pretty much on a daily basis. And I think I should probably follow up at some point with the fisherman.
In reflection, when you think about the legacy that you want to leave behind, what do you hope it will be?
I don't feel comfortable using the word legacy. I hope the impact that I could potentially have is, number one, more people want to be journalists. I think that would be really, great for people to want to be professional storytellers. I mean, that's our community. That's our culture. It's so natural to us. I have so many journalists in my family. They don't know they're a journalist, but, you know, they report the news a lot faster than I do. And I think secondly is for people to trust news. I think these days, you know, in the age of social media, and that's part of why I adapted to become a digital news outlet. But ultimately to still trust news, you know, and to support news, because we need it. And the one local paper here that's closing at the end of the year, that's a great loss. So I hope that people support local, legitimate news, fact-based journalists who care about consequences, right? Don't just have a YouTube channel or a Facebook page and a big mouth to just say whatever they want. You know, I hope people know that our job requires multiple checks and balances too, and that's what journalism is. I really hope that, number one, we can raise the next generation of professional journalists, and number two, they have somewhere to go to do the good job.
Tomas Manglonia, thank you so much for joining me on Stories from the Pacific, sharing your story, traveling around the world, but then always coming back to community, and all the best with Marianas Press.
Thank you so much.
That was Tomas Manglonia, independent storyteller. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber. This story was produced on the lands of the Yagara and Turrbal people. I'm hosting this story on the lands of the Kaurna people.